Welcome to the Male Fertility Podcast, a podcast designed to help, support, and educate men as they go through their own fertility struggles. I'm Kieran.
And I'm Sean. And we'll do that by sharing our stories of what we went through, as well as having guests share their knowledge and experience. Right, let's get into today's episode. Hello and welcome to this week's episode. This week we are absolutely delighted to be joined by Carl Tracy, who's come on to share his story with us. And it's an honour. Carl, welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm a fan.
Oh, thank you, mate.
Yeah. I've never had someone say that to me before.
Honestly, I've listened to, I think, pretty much every episode. So, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. You know, that's why we do it, and hopefully it will just be like chatting to two old mates, because that's what we aim to be. We get it. It's two mates who completely get it. So
yeah,
welcome. Thanks for coming on and for putting yourself out there.
Yeah.
Because as we're about to go into, you know, you're very much still in it. Why don't we start off with kind of with that? Is where are you at with everything at the moment?
Yeah, so as you say, at the moment, I am right in the middle of that kind of storm, shall we say. So I'll kind of bring you maybe up to speed just with, everything really. So my wife and I have been together for almost 10 years. We've been married for 6.5 of those years. And we always kind of had very open conversations about eventually starting a family and wanting children. It was always just really one of those things where, I mean, they say there's never a right time, but it's definitely a better time now to have children. We were both performers and were working in theatre and television, and obviously not the most stable of incomes. But now we have enough work and do lots of other things as well that would enable us to start a family, you know, and we have our house now, and we're very lucky to have that bit of stability, I suppose. So so we started trying for a baby. It'll be coming up to, it will be 2 years this summer. So really, Catherine came off the pill in May 2023. I imagine most women were quite worried about how long it would take to get her natural cycles back. But actually, it was very quick. It didn't take long at all. She'd been on the pill for 16 years. So, yeah, it kind of, we were expecting it to maybe take a little bit longer. So really, the August of 2023, we probably started trying. And Catherine is very, she's a planner. She likes a plan, which has actually worked quite well for IVF. You know, if there's a plan, then she can really move forwards, you know, she thrives off that. So she was very much doing the wee sticks, and the, you know, I'd wake up every morning to the noise of that little thermometer beeping as she's taking the temperature, and so that we knew exactly, you know, when she'd be ovulating. And really, we didn't think much of it, really, even for the first 6 months, 7 months, 8 months, you know, every month, you know, when the period would arrive, it was like, okay, next time, you know. And then it kind of got to about the year mark, or was coming up to the year mark, and Catherine was like, I think I'm just going to start maybe the ball rolling and just phone up the local GP and just start to get this process maybe started, to get some tests just to see where we're at. It's probably also worth mentioning as well, Catherine is an IVF baby. She's an IVF twin. My naivety really with all of this was, well, we might have trouble, and maybe that's because it's hereditary, maybe it's passed down, or, you know, something like that. The reason for Catherine being an IVF twin is still like unexplained, really, so we weren't really too much clearer with that anyway. But Catherine was like, let's just start that process, you know. So Catherine started going in initially for her tests, and blood tests, and then a Hycosi, where they will, you know, check her tubes and check there's no kind of blockage or anything like that, and just check the ovaries and just kind of get a bit of a better understanding of if there's anything going on there, you know. And Catherine's results all came back perfect, you know, all kind of good. And so she mentioned to me that, you know, I would have to do a semen analysis. And we'll, you know, she was very much like, you need to phone up, you know, you need to phone up and get that booked. And I was like, yeah, yeah, I will. And was kind of just not necessarily scared, but I, again, my naivety in this was just like, it'll be fine. I'll be fine. You know, I'd always associated, you know, problems with a low sperm count with poor health or those kind of, you know, things that you Google, you know, if you put into Google reasons for a low sperm count, a lot of the things that would come up would not have applied to me. I work as a personal trainer and a fitness coach, very health conscious, enjoy the gym, enjoy all, you know, staying very active. People would always kind of joke to us because we were quite open with telling people that we were trying for a baby, and they were like, oh, you know, you guys will be fine. You know what I mean? Your babies will come sprinting out, you know, kind of thing, and made those kind of jokes. And I think in my head, I was like, yeah, it will be okay. So yeah, I eventually booked myself in for a semen analysis and had to wait 3 months. I didn't realize it would be such a long kind of process. So that would be probably my first piece of advice. If there's anybody listening who is thinking about, you know, getting a sperm analysis, is to do it maybe sooner rather than later. And I know now, since learning that there are at-home kits and things like that as well, and getting a better idea of sperm health a little bit earlier on. But yeah, it was quite a long wait. We were looking at kind of end of July before I was able to test. So yeah, I did the semen analysis, which is, I thoroughly enjoyed listening to your experiences of that, because we used to call it the wacky races. it's just crazy. It's, I feel like there's a comedy there somewhere, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
You could call it, what would you call it? The wank room. On channel 4.
It's just, isn't it? Just
it's got channel 4 written all over it.
Just racing down the A3 with this little pot of sperm in my pocket, you know, trying to keep it warm. I was like, oh, I'll pop it on the seat next to me and turn the seat in heat on, you know. But yeah, had the semen analysis and again didn't really think anything of it. I was going away the next week for work. And I was just like, oh, I'll phone them up when I come back. I'd had a message to say, call up your GP to discuss your sperm results. And I was due to go away on a job. I think it was in Ibiza or somewhere like that. And I said, oh, I'll deal with it when I come back, kind of thing. And then I think I called them up and I wasn't able to get through to the right person. And they, you know, I left a message and they'd call back. So I was going for one of my personal trainer naps, as I call them, the nap in the middle of the day, you know, between your early clients and your late clients. And I just had a phone call. Catherine was next to me as well. So I kind of woke up a bit groggy from this nap. And it was the local GP just to say, we need you to test again. They were like, your numbers are lower than we would like. That's all they said. And Catherine's kind of next to me going, ask for the numbers, you know. She was far more clued up than I was. And I said, you know, is it possible to get a copy of these numbers, you know, and a printout kind of thing? And she was like, yeah, you just make your way down to the GP and we can get that for you. So this is all kind of going on mid-nap, very kind of groggy. So I put down the phone, and obviously I've had her on speakerphone, so Catherine knows as well. And I can just kind of see her kind of, the color kind of go from her face a little bit. As I say, she was already by this point quite clued up with infertility. I feel she was already listening to podcasts about IVF, and so she will have understood these numbers better than me. So then we eventually went down and we had the printout, which I literally still have here, and it is literally just, you know, a list of all of these things that mean nothing to me, you know, at this point. And a list of numbers, and you're kind of given this printout and almost off on your merry way. The option I think was there, if I wanted to book in with my GP to discuss further, then I could. But at this point, I'm just kind of faced with these numbers, as I say, and I just understand that they're low and that I'll need to do it again. So that was the kind of first moment there, really. And yeah, I, d- it was a really weird feeling. I think initially I was just very much like, there's been a mistake. Something must have gone wrong. I must have done the test wrong. Maybe I'd missed some of it. Or, you know, you start questioning something must have been off. I mean, just to give you an idea of those numbers, just in case it is useful for anybody listening or, you know.
Yeah, sure.
So for example, the count was under 2 million. And next to it, they kind of put a number as to say where they would expect it to be, between 14 to 16 million. But all of the numbers really down there were quite low. The motility, the forwards progression, and the morphology, so the shape of the sperm, was 1% when they would want ideally 4, I believe. So, yeah. So I basically, yeah, I got booked in for a second semen analysis relatively quick. By this point, Catherine had already kind of been pushing to be referred to our local fertility unit at the local hospital, and had kind of put those wheels in motion quite quickly, I think, knowing that we were most likely going to need some kind of help, some kind of intervention as well. But yeah, and then we just so happened we'd got quite a big holiday booked last August. We were doing a road trip across California. Amazing. We'd kind of just planned it earlier in the year. And I almost wonder now, looking back, if that was kind of subconsciously thinking this could be our last shot to do this before hopefully we'll have children, or, you know. So I feel like I maybe buried my head in the sand with that initial diagnosis. And didn't really maybe properly deal with it until I came home from that.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's
really common. Like from the guys that we've talked to, that initial denial and kind of thinking that someone else has made the mistake. Because at the end of the day, you've got to acknowledge something that no man really wants to acknowledge, is that there's something wrong with his fertility. We've talked about it on this podcast so many times, and that's a big kick to the ego, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it's definitely huge. a very common, I'd say, symptom of the diagnosis, if that makes sense, like that emotional response.
Yeah. Yeah. I was quite angry as well for quite a while. I felt angry and just this kind of like, this is unfair. You know, this feels unfair. And just naturally when we were going for our meetings with the GPs and with the fertility clinic, they would have to go through a set list of questions. Of course they would, to ask things like, do you smoke? Do you drink? And all of these kind of things. And I'd be sat there in I coach for F45, and I'd be in between coaching classes, coming from the gym studio straight there, and I just remember sitting there in my uniform thinking, this is not happening. I feel like I've, you know, treated my body really well, and I've always felt like I've had a good relationship with my body in a way. I know that sounds a bit weird, but I do, you know what I mean? Like, if I wanted to do a certain fitness event, I know how to train for it to then get the result I wanted, whereas this was just no control over this. There was nothing at that point I felt I could have done, or, you know, I was like, why is this not working as it kind of should? I just remember, being sat there and her going through these questions, and it almost felt like you were back at school. Like, she turned to Catherine and gave Catherine all of her kind of numbers as such, and, you know, went through her kind of diagnosis as such, and this is great, this is good, you know, and all these things. And then she turned to me and be like, right, Carl, let's go through yours. And then it was like, oh, here we go. And the second analysis, nothing was really different at all. I'd started taking a supplement as well to kind of help, your Proxeed, that kind of Impril, just to see if that would help boost anything. But nothing was really, nothing had really changed. They'd suggested going for an ultrasound, which I was very keen to do, you know, and I kind of want, naturally in this part of the process, I wanted to almost pin it on something, and thought, you know, maybe I could pin this on something. I went for an ultrasound, and they did find varicocele. So a blockage on the right side, not an enormous varicocele, just kind of a medium, nothing that they felt that they should operate on, or even if they were to, they didn't really believe that it would change the output, really. But even actually just having that just helped a little bit, just helped ease that somehow.
Yeah, I think that's very common amongst us blokes, is that we do want to pin it on something if possible.
Yeah.
Having that big unknown as to why this huge life-changing situation is happening is it's a hard thing to do when it's just kind of floating and with a lot of question marks. So it's, very common, I think, as is something else you said. I saw Kieran and I, we're both smiling when you said about Catherine being the planner.
There's
a lot of similarities throughout, because a lot of the guys we've spoken to this series, behind every good man is the female planner.
Oh yeah, she's incredible. And she's been an absolute rock. And I think in a way, I was asking her about this last night. I said, you know, how did you feel when I was getting this kind of diagnosis? And she said, as sad as she was for me and hated to see me like that, she said, in a way, it gave me a little bit of like, that's why it is. That's why it's not been working. And because I think now, seeing others, I think one of the worst things is having the unexplained infertility. I think that's really hard. I can imagine that's, difficult, just being in this kind of weird middle, lost in the dark a little bit with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, thank you, mate. And so have you been given any direction or more of an idea as to what may be causing those numbers?
Not massively. I went for the blood tests and things like that. But as we were going for more and more of these tests and ruling out the things like being a carrier for cystic fibrosis and these kind of things that I was learning about as we were going along, really, because like maybe many who are listening, this is all new. I didn't, hand on heart, I didn't really know male infertility was a real, not that it wasn't a real thing, but for example, something like azoospermia, I had no idea really until I listened to this podcast what that was, what that entailed and what that meant. So all of this felt like very new ground. And so when they were talking about tests for cystic fibrosis, I'm literally there going, have I got cystic fibrosis? what is this? And it's like, no, they're checking, certain things that they have to check, kind of along the way. So no, they didn't really find anything other than the varicocele that it could be. It now, reading more and kind of delving a little bit deeper and learning about how, of course, it's helpful to be healthy and to exercise for sperm health, and of course it is, and to eat well. There may have been points maybe over the last few years where maybe I was overtraining at times. I know that a certain level of stress on the body, I was competing in like high rocks races, and still do. But I think since getting that diagnosis, I definitely started to just tail it back a little bit and listen to maybe my body a little bit more. But other than that, and maybe, we're laughing there in the meetings because they ask them, have you ever had any trauma to the balls? And you're sat there thinking, well, there was this one time in year six where Russell Hartwell kicked me in the nads, kind of thing. But you're like, as many of us had, and they talk about, obviously, are you wearing loose enough underwear? And again, coming from a performing background, I was thinking, oh God, like I've played Peter Pan before in the past where you have to wear a jock strap and you fly, and that you are, I remember joking in our dress run as they're hoisting me up to the ceiling going, I do want to have kids one day, ha ha ha, laughing. And now I look back and go, you do wonder if some of these things along the way have done something. I don't know, But again, that could be just me looking for a, something.
Very natural, very natural. Because you do, you kind of hyper focus on all those little situations, and Russell Hartwell, like things like that. But it's very natural. You certainly won't be the first or the last person to do that, because you want to forensically analyze everything that's could have caused it. It's, when there's not something immediately obvious anyway.
I remember sitting there as well in the meeting with our fertility unit, our fertility doctor, and just I remember just saying to him, you know, what can I do to change, what can I do to help this, you know, before we actually go through with this IVF. And he just literally looked me in the eyes and he was just like, there's nothing you can do and there is nothing you have done. He said, you need to try and just, you know, try and come to an understanding of that.
Cool. You know, I thought you were going to say that he says, just relax.
Yeah. Oh, no. He would have done. not just relax. But he, and that, I don't know. I'll always kind of remember that because I could just tell that he'd probably had many a man walk through that door and be doing the same kind of thing where there's this blame and this like, okay, but what can I do to change it kind of thing. I remember saying as well in one of those fertility meetings, you know, I remember just saying to her, I was like, please tell me that there are lots of other men like me coming through this door, having the same diagnosis, who feel that they are looking after themselves and doing the things that they should try and do. And she was just nodding the whole time. And I said, well, why do I not know about them? And she was like, they're out there. She was like, they don't talk about it. Which is actually kind of when I fell upon the Male Fertility podcast, because it was Catherine again that had found your podcast and said, I've got something that I think you should listen to. And they're, you know, two guys that talk about this with other people as well and talk about their stories. And so I did, and it was just this, yeah, just a bit of relief to just go, oh, there are others, and many of them.
Yeah, and now you are one of those, and like we said, you know, we thank you so much for doing that, because we had an athlete on earlier in the series as well, and again, it's that thing of, but hang on, I'm fit and I'm healthy, and I went through, certainly not to your level. I'm not going to put myself in that bracket of fitness. But when I got diagnosed with acidospermia, I was like, no, not me. That I'm, you know, I'm fit and healthy, and that type of thing. The image that always came to my mind of someone with no sperm was like Mr. Burns on The Simpsons.
Yeah,
and it's like, but yeah, it's very natural, and like that person said to you. People weren't talking, but now we are slowly, and it can happen, and that's why it is important to share this. These stories such as yours is so powerful, so thank you again.
Definitely, mate. I found myself in the same category as you, Carl, where I was doing the right things, but I ate well, I exercised, but for me there were certain other aspects of my lifestyle that clearly had an impact. The biggest one was probably like enjoying myself, partying and having a drink. Similar thing. I don't actually know the reason for my infertility, why my numbers are so low. I was lucky enough to identify that when I was drinking in more, the heavier amounts, it did impact, you know, my sperm quality, my sperm count, everything. But there are so many guys out there that just don't know. And still today, that's something that, if I think about it, it bugs me. I'm like, why? Why?
Yeah.
I'm happy. I've processed with the fact of this is how I am. That's fine. But I still want to know why, you know?
Yeah, like, same.
What's caused it? But I'll just never know. I'll just never know. I'm quite content with how I am. But
yeah,
I wish I had that answer. You know?
Yeah, this was something as well. The fertility doctor was saying, and he's a guy, you know, and he was saying that there is just this enormous drop in male, you know, in male infertility at the moment. And he said, and in honesty, he said we don't really know why. Whether it's because I don't know whether age is playing a bit more of a factor, and I'm 38 now. But again, it's, you know, you hear about men having kids, you know, way, you know, older than that. But whether it's things like phones in pockets, and, you know, he was just almost throwing ideas out there, but he's saying we don't really know why, but it is becoming more and more common. And it's weird. We've been quite open about IVF from the very beginning, not even just with family, friends. And I've been relatively, because my work is self-employed work. So it's, you know, going to clients' houses, training them either in their garden or wherever in their home. And then, you know, and I've seen a lot of these clients for years. And obviously with IVF comes a lot of appointments and things that you have to physically be there for. And I just said to Catherine from the top, I just said, I'm just going to tell them. I'm just going to be honest and say what it is that we're going through. And the amount of those people that I opened up to, and then they went, oh, my children are IVF. Or, you know, that was us as well. And have then become, you know, almost a bit of another shoulder to lean on a little bit. And yeah, I don't know, just sharing that and talking to more people has just really helped lift that weight off. Mm.
That's incredible, yeah. And like, because so often, and we were the same, right? And the guests we've had on, their advice has been to open up, and to, yeah. Everyone says the same. Once you do it, everything gets easier. But for so many men, that's at the very end.
Yeah,
and it certainly was for me. And it's like, ah, I wish I'd done that earlier. And you've done it from the outset. Yeah. So, yeah, fair play on that one. And how did that take yourself back to the first person, kind of maybe outside of your immediate family and friends, the first kind of external person? Like, what did that feel like? Do you remember it?
It was actually a client who I trained for a few years. She was one of the clients who had been through IVF herself. And I just kind of, we always catch up on the week, you know, during warm up, we'll have a little chat, what's been going on, you know. Yeah, they like a good gossip as well as working out. And I just told her and just that, I don't know, that relief. There was a real element of relief of just being able to share it. And then obviously having that extra thing of, we went through that as well, you know. She was like, give my number to Catherine, and if ever she needs anything, you just mess it, you know, and just having that shared experience there. But and then after that, I think that was good to almost dip the toe in that water, because I was like, well, okay, that's not so bad. I can tell more people about this and open up to more family and friends. You do then, of course, open yourself up to some of the responses that you get back. Might not always be the response that you want, and I still don't know what the right response is, if that makes sense. You know, you get all sorts from the congratulations and things like that when you're telling them that you're going through IVF, or you've got it booked in, or you know, those kind of things. And or that's, we get a lot of, that's very exciting. And it is exciting, but I just don't know if exciting is always the phrase I would use in this situation. Yeah. There is excitement, but...
Yeah. Well, yeah, usually because it's taken so long to get there and then it feels like a light at the end of the tunnel. So in more respect, it is, but yeah, it's like I'd rather be driving down through the Pacific Coast Highway. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Absolutely.
That's a bit more
that's my idea of exciting.
Yeah. And we've been very lucky, I have to say as well. Our process has been relatively fast. And I can't speak highly enough of the hospital that we're with, and we're referred through to King's Fertility, and they've been excellent, I have to say. And as I say, our process has been very speedy compared to other stories that we've heard. So, we're very grateful for that. As I say, we got put forward through for ICSI, where we're at the moment is they've done egg collection. For Catherine, we had 10 eggs, 9 of those made it through to the next, to maturity, 6 embryos, which then eventually went down to 4 blastocysts. So 4 shots, I suppose, 4 goes. So 3 of those have been frozen, and we've had the fresh transfer, and we are now currently in the 2-week wait, essentially. So, nothing we can do. We're at that point where, there's nothing to do but try and fill your time between now and then.
Yeah, the dreaded 2-week wait that everyone
wants,
but at the same time,
yeah,
it's the worst feeling in the world at points of it. You know, before we came on, I said to you, you've got no control over that. Just literally sit. You can do all the preparing in the world. I found, because we went for a few 2 weeks wait, and we found that actually what made it better for us was just spending more time together. As a couple, prioritizing each other, knowing that we need to support each other. Have you found that there's anything that particular that you've kind of changed in your daily life to kind of cope with the last or the, these 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's again, being self-employed, it is a blessing at these kind of times, because you can start to scale back the workload if you need to. My natural instinct is like, right, keep busy, just work all the hours, you know, that you can. But actually, I don't always know if that is the way forward, because, you know, you're obviously with an experience like this, naturally your mental health is tested. And I find that becomes worse when you're tired. So we've just been trying as best we can with this entire process, but particularly with this weight, to literally just handle this one day at a time. We've gone right back to the box sets on TV that make us feel good, and nothing that requires any form of concentration as well, we've agreed on. You know, we're going back to the beginning of Gavin and Stacey and all these warm like programs, Friends, from the, you know, all of those things that just, yeah, just fill your cup, I suppose. You know, fill in the cup. That's all we're doing.
Perfect.
It's so important, isn't it? Just turning off from trying to disengage from the reality that you're currently living. And going back to those comfort things.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it was actually Family Guy. I watched a massive amount of Family Guy.
Because
it's stupid and it makes me laugh. That and South Park. Like, I'm very immature.
So
it's just trying to take you back to that. And it's almost one of those things, if you don't prepare for it, it is a lot harder. I truly believe that. Because the first cycle that we went into, we just tried to carry on. And actually what we found was, we were just every night, every day, we were going over the same conversations of, I wonder what's happening. When did we find out? Shall we ring them? Shall we do this? Shall we do that? Yeah. But actually the second time we went through it, it was much better, because we'd experienced it and we're like, well, let's try and put some safety barriers in that kind of stop us from going slightly mad in those 2 weeks.
Yeah.
At the same time, you can't get rid of the anxiety completely. It is there.
No.
You've just got to learn to juggle it.
Yes.
It can really affect you otherwise.
It can. And I find, certainly at the time of year we're doing, I don't think there's a good time of year for any IVF treatment. You know, it's always going to be hard to deal with. But I find January is a long month, right? As it is.
Yeah.
It just is for everybody. We're all a bit like, nobody's really doing many fun things in January. It's not the best. So, as I say, it's just making the most of what we can, and just trying to celebrate those little small wins, I suppose. And we keep comparing, it's really ridiculous, right? But me and my wife compare this whole IVF process like the X Factor. And we say, you know, you start off, there's a lot of drop-off points. If you think about the X Factor, you've got to get through to you've got to get through the producers to see Simon Cowell. Then you've got to get through to boot camp. Then you've got to get through boot camp to judges' houses. Then you've got judges' houses. Then you're on to the final 12. And we keep joking and going like, right, where are we now in this? How close are we to, you know, this win? And we do keep saying, you know, but we've made it to this stage, and we're lucky to have those four blastocysts, because that isn't going to be the story for everybody. And as I say, that you're walking this kind of very thin path, and there are a lot of drop-off points with IVF, and it's just about trying to get to the next point, I think, and not look too far ahead, I think, has helped us. And just, which is way easier said than done. Of course it is.
100%.
Yeah. Just trying to.
I love that.
Yeah.
Love the X Factor. Yeah. It's brilliant.
Yeah. It's ridiculous, but yeah.
The thing that no one prepares you for is, if you get a positive test, there's another level of anxiety. Oh, this is new. But like you said, you have to take it as it comes. And it's, you know, if I really reflect on it, that's the path of parenthood that never goes away. You know, it's from the moment you want a child to, I guess, to when they're 18, that, you know, I haven't experienced any of that yet, but it comes. Every stage has a level of anxiety. But this one is probably definitely the toughest because it's the first and it's the real longing for it. But it sounds like you've definitely got some good things in place to kind of help you both cope.
Try.
How's the missus been with it? Has she been calm? Because my wife, Jennifer, was fine. Maybe after day five, six, then she started to get a little bit more anxious. And then as the time gets nearer, she's trying to look for those signs that might be occurring. So how's the wife doing?
She's been okay. And we kind of, one day, and we both have experienced this, where one day we're very much like, this is going to work. This is actually going to work. And, you know, she's there like just secretly kind of working out the due date. And then she's like, no, this is ridiculous. You know, and then today, for example, and she said it's for no reason at all. She's like, but today I've got it in my head that it might not work, you know, and it's just this up and down. But she has managed to stay relatively calm. She's like me as well. She's very much a talker. She's a heart on the sleeve. And if she's going to cry, she'll cry. And, you know, and again, as I say, she's a talker, and I think that's really helped her. We just so happen as well to have a very close friend who is at the same stage as us with IVF at the moment. They're literally a week behind us. It's crazy. They would literally come out of the consultation room and we would go in, you know, these paths crossed, which is actually the person who, my wife also does a podcast called IVF BFF, which I know we've chatted about and said, you know, hopefully one day we'll get you guys on there, you know, would be epic. But she does this podcast with this girl, as I say, who is also going through this process. And that's been really helpful, I think, for her. They leave each other like 20-minute voice notes on WhatsApp and, you know, that kind of thing. So that's really helped. But yeah, we've just tried, as I say, to take each day, one day at a time, celebrate those little small wins. And, you know, we had a printout on, because we actually found the transfer day a really good day, which is really odd to say, but it was actually regardless of the results, I suppose, and maybe that's easier for me to say now, not knowing what that result is, but regardless of that, that day will always be quite a special day, because it, for me, it was just, this is like science at its absolute best, to see that embryo going in and seeing that kind of flash of light on the screen that you see, and it's there, this little teeny, you know, thing that's no bigger than a grain of sand, but it's a little bit of you and a little bit of your wife. And just having that kind of moment, knowing that that could be your child, was really special. I think we really took some of that bit of joy with us. And, you know, we have the little scan picture on the fridge there, you know.
Yeah. And it's a strange situation in the fact that, you know, you're involved in that and you're seeing the embryo be transferred, and like, you know, people who just try and conceive naturally, that they're so unaware of all of that, and even to the point of knowing when they're pregnant to a certain degree, and you become hyper focused and aware of it, but there's joy in those moments, like you said, and you know, and getting to the point of a real gratitude for where you are, and the fact that, you know, you're talking about the embryos and stuff, and also trying to stay in that realistic, hopeful state where you don't want to get too carried away, but ultimately it is that hope that gets you through, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, while we're talking about, you know, people's responses to it, actually one of my clients said to me when I told her that this was happening, she just said, I feel really hopeful for you guys. And I kind of said to Catherine, I said, that's probably the perfect response, actually. It's that hopeful, because we are, hopeful. Sometimes when we've spoken about it to other people, and maybe they've picked up on a little bit of uncertainty from us, because we are obviously uncertain whether it's going to work, they've been like, no, you know, you must think positive. And we both get a little bit of a bit, not annoyed, but a bit frustrated sometimes with the, you know, you've just got to believe it and you've just got to manifest it and da da da. And Catherine's a little bit more like, of course. And, you know, we're always, the cup is half full, but we're also aware that there's a lot of science involved in this. And so, yeah, it's managing those expectations whilst still trying to be as positive as we can, because we are positive and I do believe in my heart of hearts it can work on a good day. But likewise, yeah.
I think it's a really important thing to touch on. Like, a lot of people don't know what to say, and we talked about it before, but it's, someone having the best for you in terms of, I really hope it goes well. That's all you need, isn't it? Like that kind of honest, pure response. Not trying to fill it with all the other crap that some people do. Like, just feel like, well, I hope it goes well. If you need anything, just let me know. I'll be thinking of you. And that's enough to go, thanks.
Exactly. People, I think, a lot of the natural response is as well, and I may have done this maybe in the past, or would have done this if I wasn't going through IVF, but when you tell somebody that you're going through this process, a natural instinct from them is to sometimes go, oh, my so-and-so went through that as well. And I kind of now feel like I understand why they're saying that. And it is just to find that common ground and to hopefully give you a bit of a positive story and to connect, you know, because it's there, that's their way of trying to connect to it. But sometimes in the moment,
One of the biggest things, this happened to me recently. I was in a conversation with someone that I know, and they said, I can't have children. And it was really busy. It was a really busy environment. And it wasn't the right time for me to kind of lean in and go, you know, so I just acknowledged what she said. And then I went and found her another time and just kind of had that conversation with her. Just to let you know that, like, if you need anything, let me, you know, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of you. And you don't always have to know what to say in the moment. You can go back. Like, it is something, if someone's opened up to you, they're willing to talk about it. But I guess that comes with experience, doesn't it? You know, I've had quite a few of those conversations now. But also, if someone does say the wrong thing, don't take it as a personal thing to you. It's just the fact that you really don't know what to say.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just have to take a deep breath and move on. Don't let it affect the rest of your day, because your day could be going really well. You could be going into a lovely transfer, like you've just said. And but it's easier said than done, isn't it?
Yeah, of course. And to be honest, most people around us have just been amazing and wonderful. And you really see, you know, amazing friendships come out, and family just being absolute rocks, you know, and lucky to have that.
That's great. That's like worth its weight in gold, really, to have that support. How about yourself? I'd be interested to know, like, how you've changed as a person, like, kind of within yourself. Obviously, you've described how you have that network and you've shared from the outset, but have you felt at all that you've changed in any respect?
I feel like I feel thicker skinned, I feel, because of this. More resilient, I think, already from this. And I think it's also just, it's reestablished for me just how much I want to be a dad, actually. I always knew I wanted children. And my wife and I have worked, we mainly work with children as well. The performing work I did was children's shows and children's television. And my wife runs a theatre school now for children. So we're surrounded by youngsters a lot. And and we see a lot of parents and see their lives and go, yeah, okay, we're ready for that challenge. So yeah, it's just, I think it's really reaffirmed to me just how much, yeah, I am ready and wanting that. And just that, yeah, we are made of strong stuff, even though there's, yeah, naturally we have those days where it feels like it's tougher than others, but yeah, I do feel stronger because of this.
Yeah. Yeah. Kira and I would definitely echo that about ourselves as well. And about our relationships as well. 'Cause it gives you that kind of, that shared challenge that you're in together and you can get through it together. It teaches you something new about yourselves as individuals and as a couple and new, yeah, to quote a great Ian Dowie, bounce back ability, i.e. Yeah. resilience.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really has. And I think it's just taught me just what I need to do on those days to try and fill the cup a little bit.
Mm.
And what I don't need to do, I suppose, and what needs to be prioritized, you know, sleep, you know, trying to drink enough water, trying to just, yeah, do those, get those almost like basics in, I suppose, which can sometimes go out of the window at times like this. But actually, they're the things that you really need to help prop you up.
Yeah, I mean, sleep is a powerful thing. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, you mentioned it earlier, Carl, like, when you're tired, the world seems worse.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter how, you know, it could be the smallest thing, but you kind of really could justify it in your head, don't you? It's like something's really wrong. But yeah, you know, IVF can seem very, very... even more stressful when you're tired, you've been at work, you know, you haven't got the sleep, maybe you haven't eaten as well, haven't drunk as well, and a good nap.
Oh yeah,
it's amazing. Like even today, like if I'm stressed, I'm going for a nap.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I don't need long either. You know, just a quick 15 minutes, and I'm fresh as a daisy.
To be fair, I don't get much time to nap these days. And this is quoting Sean, it's generally carnage in this house, so I don't get any sleep. I have thought of before just sleeping in the car and not coming in. Just get 20 minutes here, but
yeah,
someone sees you out the window and then bang, 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 bang.
I have done that before. Yeah.
Generally, it's Jen. She's like, get in the house. But sleep is an amazing thing. It truly is. And it's definitely, if people are struggling, especially during this two week wait, you know, prioritize yourself, get some sleep, eat well, move, even if it's just long walks with the dog or long walks on your own with your partner, just get moving. It's the remedy for most things, and it's pretty much free, isn't it?
It is. It's, yeah, being outside, as you say, we have a dog as well, and that's been, oh my gosh, he's like a therapy dog now. We're just like, we're like, right, grab the dog, let's have a cuddle, you know?
Yeah.
Amazing.
It's definitely, it's anything though, like cat, a dog, because they just don't give you their opinion.
No.
And that's all you want, isn't it? It's almost what you want from other people. Like, don't give me your opinion. Just listen to what I've got to say, because I just got to get it out. And that's why therapy is so good. When if you go through that, someone, a good therapist sits there and just goes, go on, you talk, and I'll facilitate you getting to your answer.
Yeah. And we also as well, actually, just, that just reminded me actually as well, we did actually have counselling, which we were offered through the NHS. And we both kind of agreed that actually, if that's being offered, we should take that opportunity to do it. And I can't recommend that enough, actually. Even though, as I say, we are talkers and quite open books, it still actually was really good to just sit down. It was over Zoom, and to just pour it out, you know, and to just let it out. We had the option of doing it either together and having a counseling session together, or doing it apart, you know, whatever was going to suit. We did it apart, and we both found that very helpful to just have, it is literally a listening ear, and they're not, necessarily going to have a quick fix or an answer or anything really, but you do certainly come away feeling that bit lighter. You know?
Yeah. The guy we had on last week actually talked about how important that was for him, and a real transformative moment when he first had his first session.
Yeah.
Because, not a little bit different in your case where you have been talking, but it's having that dedicated time to really focus on it and pour it out, like you said. It's really powerful.
Yeah. And I almost think if you are not a talker, then writing it down, I feel, can be a powerful tool, you know, something that only you're going to see, maybe. Yeah. And
that's what I did. Anything to get it out of your head, because it's almost impossible to make sense of those thoughts when they're just going around like a washing machine. And when you're either saying it out loud or writing it down and seeing the words look back at you, you realize that often a lot of the stuff that is troubling us the most is nonsensical things. Or even if it does make sense and it is completely valid, seeing it there or hearing it helps you make sense of it and structure it and realize how you can process it and move forward as well.
Yeah, just gives you that little bit of distance, I think, from it, you know. Mm. Without being too consumed by it.
I found that I went through a stage of just talking to myself loads. And Jim was always like, what do you say? And I was like, nothing. And it's the smallest things. And it was while we were going through our fertility journey and that. It was, I'd be doing something and I'd just start talking myself through it. Because actually I had to get it out because my head was so busy.
Yeah.
And it really does help. Just verbalizing it, even if it's just to yourself out loud, just getting it out. It's incredible, absolutely incredible. Because something so simple can help so much.
Yeah, it just deloads. It just releases that weight.
But it's mate, this has been a great chat. I really enjoyed it, and I know that guys listen to this that are in a similar situation to you now, and in terms of that 2 week wait, and men in the future are going to listen to this and they're being exactly the same place, and I know they're going to draw so much from it. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me, and thank you for doing this. As I say, you guys were and still are a real lifeline, and keep banging that drum and keep waving that flag, because it's needed.
Cheers, we're not going anywhere.
We ain't good. Going anywhere. Now, we always
are. That reminded me, Kieran. I was going to say, if you want us to come on your wife's one, I have actually seen the Instagram of that pod, actually, because I remember the mention of being an IVF twin as well.
Yeah. Oh, please do. It would be amazing. It's they pour their hearts out, bless them. And, you know, because again, we're doing this. They wanted to do it whilst going through it, you know, right in the middle of this storm.
It seems like a good time to get a plug for that, actually, for any guys who have another half who would get a lot from that. So
yeah, absolutely. So yeah, you can find it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and it's IVF BFF is the podcast. But yeah,
brilliant,
amazing.
Come and listen.
Amazing, mate. Now, we always ask listeners the same question right at the end. You've said that you've listened to all of our episodes, so you know what's coming.
Yeah.
If you could give another guy facing infertility one bit of advice, what would it be?
So obviously the talking we've covered, I know that's a lot of people's answers, but my one bit of advice would just be to don't look too far ahead. As much as possible, just take that small step that day. Just get to the next scan, the next, whatever that next appointment is, that next thing. And that, as I say, this is all way easier said than done. And I need to live by this advice myself and remind myself of it. But just control those little bits you can control at that moment, and try not to let your head run away with you too far. You know, you will deal with it when you get to it, in my opinion. I found that's helpful for me.
I love that.
It's great advice, mate.
Yeah,
I think most men are built like that. That's how we like to think. You know, yeah. What's next? What's next? So it's fantastic advice, and definitely people should take on board, mate.
Yeah.
So thanks so much, Carl, for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
We wish you the best of luck with everything. Please let us know how things go.
I will do.
And you're part of the community now, mate. So keep in touch. And cheers, mate. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. If this episode has helped you, do us a quick favour and leave us a review. You don't even have to use your real name. Every single review helps another man find this show when he needs it the most. It's honestly the best way you can help the next guy. If you've got a question or something you'd like us to cover on the mailbag, drop us an email at themalefertilitypodcast@gmail.com. We read every message and we love hearing from our listeners. And if you'd like a bit more expert guidance and support from other men on the same journey as you, you're welcome to join our free private community at nexusfertility.com. It's totally confidential and designed just for you by guys that get it. For our latest updates, follow us on social media at the Male Fertility Podcast. And remember, gents, you're not on your own.